Welcome to the No BS Podcast, an unfiltered look into the global hospitality and short-term rental industry with a focus on founder stories, current events, and culture.
I'm Mateo Bradford Vasquez.
And I'm John Stokinger.
And this is our podcast. We bring the right people to the table at the right time, giving you an inside take on the hospitality industry like no other podcast can.
We appreciate your support. So let's make this official. Make sure to like, follow, and leave a review for the No BS Pod on your favorite podcast listening platforms.
And don't forget to check out our YouTube channel as well. While you're there, please like, listen, and subscribe. And oh yeah, make sure to hit the notification button to stay up to date on all of the exciting things that No BS Productions has coming up.
Morning, Mateo. How are you?
John, I'm fantastic, brother. How are you?
I'm great, man. It's nice to see your face. It's been a little bit.
Dude, I'm fresh back from Oregon. Had a great trip out there. Saw our boy Nick Moat. Got to hang out with him for a little bit. And yeah, catch you up later. But good to
That's
be
good.
Back. Good to see your face.
Spent some time with the moms. Did that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah. Got to go to Central Oregon too and check on my stepdad and see some art. So it was a good trip.
Oh, nice. Sweet. Yeah, I definitely want to get caught up on that. Episode 121, the No BS Podcast. We have a great guest. We're sticking with the Canada theme.
Dude, we're up north quite a bit.
Yeah, the Great White North. We're excited because just in 3 weeks, we're going to be up in Banff for the Canada State Short-Term Rental Conference. So we're trying to stick with this theme. We're trying to go ahead and bring attention to the regulatory and just all the, I wouldn't say issues. Yes, there's a lot of issues, but just bring attention to what's going on and the differences and the amazing similarities and how we can better help the industry north of the border.
We're doing what we do, man. Yeah. We're going up top. We're building some partnerships. We're adding their voice to the mix. And hey, look, they're our neighbors to the north, right? Why shouldn't we do what we do and bring them into the mix? Like, it's, I don't know, to me, I see the borders, but I don't. And I know there's so many differences in the markets and everything else, but there are in the US markets. So it's like an extension team, right? Like, it fits, right? It, you know, doesn't have to work too hard to fit. It's different in the way that it should be different. And that's not a bad thing, but we're still stronger together. And I think the more we can come together around standards, conversations, ideation, idea sharing, man, we'll get into this. We're not here to talk about me and what I think today. We're getting into our guests.
No, I love hearing what you think. But without further ado, let's go ahead and introduce Mr. John Papa. I tried to go ahead and say his full last name. He said, no, just say Papa. Just say Papa. I murdered it. So John Papa with Papa's Getaways. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey guys, and thanks for having me, Mateo, John, and thanks for, as you guys just said in that opener, shining a light on Canada. We are here, we exist, and when in many ways that you guys do good things, we can as well. Like, Justin Bieber's Canadian, Drake is Canadian. We can go that way. And
well, I don't know if pulling Drake into the mix right
but let's do short-term rentals.
Yeah, that's true. The weekend is Canadian. The weekend's Canadian.
Jamal Murray, yeah.
Widespread panic.
Yeah, I love Canada, man. And and tell the people out there, man, stop hating.
Rush. Yeah. Loved. But my point being that we are capable of just as much. Our political landscape sometimes gets in the way, not for those types of talents, but maybe for our type of talents. But thanks for just shedding light on our because if there's one thing I believe, I'm looking at my screen background that I took with my own iPhone, and it's a national park by where we are in Magog, and we are cottage country. Like, we belong in this industry. It's beautiful. It's God given, and it's we shouldn't be getting in our own way.
In the past month and a half since we came on board and partnered with Can't Stays and jumped in as far as No BS, and Direct is coming up and sponsoring as well, and we're really excited and just working with Catherine, who's just amazing, to spearhead this learning experience. And I still have no idea what the hell I'm doing or reading. And I'm trying to go ahead and look at different providences and how they all work together and how you have an election in 2025, but an election can be called at any time. What the fuck? It's confusing. But it's super interesting. But from my understanding, the most interesting thing is that change can happen quickly if the right things are happening and the right people are talking about the right thing. So let's not go there right now. Let's hit the rewind button. And let's chat about you coming into the short-term rental space. What was that trajectory like for you?
Sure. I guess about 3 years ago now, I was in my 9-to-5. Shocker. I think that's how most stories start off. And I got a bit addicted to the Bigger Pockets podcast. So all types of real estate investing. And I just was soaking like a sponge because I knew that was my way out. I always knew I wanted to be into real estate at some capacity, but I didn't really know how I want to go about it. So I started just learning as many strategies as possible. And I would try to speak duplex, triplex types of strategies to my then fiance, now wife. And she's an interior designer, and taking on these, call it average looking properties, and just making a little margin off them, blank stare, just nothing. But then when I just listened probably to a short-term rental episode and how we can stand out on design and there's higher cash flow, which is something we're looking for too. And I mentioned to her, like, you can make a place really cute, go all out on your concepts, and we could be good players. Like, you make it pretty and I'll sell it. And then the eyes were shining. And but there was a, that was by 1 year later after I've soaked in all that information. So we got started 2 years ago in Magog, Quebec. So mm-hmm. I think you mentioned you're from Vermont, right at the border.
Right.
It's an hour and a half from Montreal. It's Four Seasons. There's Orford National Park. We've got a big lake during the summer. We aim for 100% occupancy during the summer. The kids are out of school, and we try to book our ski weekends in the winter. So that's the game we're playing there.
Dive into this a little bit with working with this significant other, right? How that's not always the easiest thing. We hear sometimes it works, and sometimes they're like, I separate family from work. How's that been for you?
Definitely. This has become my life, right? So there's definitely some times where I'm feeling, she doesn't necessarily say it, but I'm feeling her like, can you just shut the hell up? Yeah. Can we just talk about us? But no. Not in a bad way. It just overall, it's amazing. I remember the first time we bought a property in Magog. We're going to Walmart, and I don't know why I was so excited. I think because it was Tuesday at 2 p.m. and the rest of the world's on their struggle answering angry boss emails. And I was like, babe, isn't this great? I know we're just going to pick up some ads and stuff, but isn't this amazing? Right. I loved this freedom. And we're literally in a cottage town, and there is a little town, but you're an hour and a half away from Montreal, yet you feel this sense of, I don't know, just relaxed cottage. You hear the leaves blowing. It's just,
right.
It was beautiful. And even while I was in this setup and we were like surrounded by boxes and setting up furniture, you open the window and you just hear nothing. And it felt great. That was overall this amazing experience, because where she is really good, I would never question. She might have a question, this color or this color, and I'll just answer confidently. Always answer confidently.
100%.
And she would never
look.
Exactly. But on the flip side, she would never question my PMS decisions or what I decided to go into tents. Actually, my question, the cost of certain things, which is good. We need that. We need that. But she understands the work I'm putting on this side of things, the business side of things. And I think it works amazing because we don't really get in our own way. And yet when we set up furniture, we have even a system that is very, she reads the manual and I execute, because if it was the flip side, then there'd be a little civil war.
I'm relatively handy, right? I own a ton of tools. I get shit done. But when it comes to getting like projects, like it's never like for us, it's one of our friction points. But it works out in the end.
Whatever. No, dude. Hey, John. So John's one of those guys who'll be like, yeah, I'm going on vacation. But hey, man, check in. How's your vacation doing? Oh, man, I'm knee deep in remodeling my kitchen. Like I got the oven halfway out and all the walls are down, and I'm like, vacation?
And then I spent last weekend painting.
And then he's like, I'm handy. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, talking to a contractor who's remodeling some shit for me.
Yeah, exactly. But on to that point, 3 years ago, on a scale from 1 to 10, I was at 0 handy, and now I'm at a 3 or a 4, and I'm saying that
solid
and I'm
four.
Four.
Yeah, no, right? But. No, and that's the thing is I'm at 3 dishwashers deep right now, and yeah. I'm proud. Whatever, say what you want. Hey, I've set up.
Oh, dude, you got to start somewhere.
No, exactly. I can tell you 100%. Like, I'm probably, just like I was saying, I'm the contractor guy. But the most, the things that I am most proud of installing is a garage door opener, a microwave, and there's one more, like appliance thing that I was just like, fuck it, looked it up on YouTube and did it. And then sat back and was like, oh yeah, that was cool. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was, but still not the handy guy.
It's really about learning it one time. And this was before we even got the short-term rental space. We had moved into a condo during COVID, which north of the border was bad, but even without within the 10 provinces, we were the worst. You could think of all of North America. We were just on an island stuck and they stopped contractors and we wanted to redo our floors before moving the furniture in. So I had some handyman friends that showed me how one had to do it for one bedroom. But then I took that the next day and my wife Lisa became my little helper. Yeah. But we did that floor together. And I was like, doing a floor? And 6 months before, we're in, like I said, I'm in a 9-to-5 and I was corporate banker, still am. I'm a mortgage broker now, but
talk to us about like that transition. Like, what was the industry that you walked into, right? I came from a financial services background also, right? So coming into the short-term rental, vacation rental space is weird to me. Like, it's, whoa. Like, it's a completely different just vibe, landscape, people, attitude. What was it like in Canada? Because we have experience here in the markets in the U.S. and we see how the market's evolving here. What did you walk into when you stepped into this business early stage? Talk to us about that.
The very first thing I did, by the way, was, and it's not the plug, but I bought Avery Carl's book, Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth, because I don't think there's a better, it's a cute little pocketbook and it tells you everything you need to do.
We had her on the podcast.
Yeah, she's amazing. Great. I got to meet her in Nashville too a month or so ago. I had bought that book after I bought the property. So that big question mark going into buying the property was then solved by that book. I knew what types of things I had to look for, whether it was a PMS. I knew that a guidebook helped. I think she even writes in her book about how the sticky coffee fingers, old school guidebook. We should have a digital guidebook that then the client or the guest could, I still say bank client, that the guest could have access to information the second they book, even before they book, rather than when they walk in and all the kayaks are gone for the weekend. All those little strategies, even having a smart lock so I can be as hands off as possible. So what that book showed me is I want to come in and I want to come in strong and have all the right things in place. If you get a 4-star on that first booking, that's suicide. I knew it would look good because Lisa is an interior designer and that wasn't the part that was stressing us out. But the fact that I read that book put a lot of that stress, like how to's to rest. Don't get me wrong, until you see that first booking come in and the flow, I think we went live in April, which is dead time, but it is when people are booking the summer.
Right.
And then within the month, you just see booking. And it was good to see it work until from February to May. And we didn't know it was actually going to work. There was definitely stress, but thanks to the education piece, reading that book, and then any short-term rental podcast I listened to, I did.
That's awesome. That's super smart. So right now you're a small property management company. You got and some inventory up in Quebec. You have you're sitting right now in Southern Florida, so you're setting up inventory there. Where are you taking Papa's Getaways? Where do you see yourself? What's your ultimate goal? You're small today. I see in your eyes that this isn't where you're going to be. I see some scaling happening. What are you thinking?
Yeah. I can tell you, first of all, as a mortgage broker, we're done owning for a bit because we're tapped out. But I want to start bringing in our qualities that we offer, whether it's a full tech stack and the service that we bring to guests, to other owners within our area in Eastern Townships in Quebec. I'm down in Florida and that's done with intention and emotion. So first of all, the emotion part, my parents have owned since 2009 down in South Florida. So we've been coming down to Pompano forever. I'm in Pompano Beach right now. So when we do come down for Christmas, I came down with my mother-in-law a couple months ago for the holidays and we paid an Airbnb. And I was like, we do this. We should be paying someone else. I should get paid to be here. Where the intent piece comes in is I think back home, Quebecers, they own one of two things if they own a second home. It's a cottage or it's a place in Florida. So I want to be that gateway to help owners buy the property, whether it's a cottage up north, ski location, or help them. And a lot of education comes with buying in Florida. It's a completely different market that I just went through. Even we've got fencers here today, and the permitting, if you change a light bulb here, it seems
right.
Exaggerating to make a point, point made.
Serious at the same time. Yeah.
It's real. Yeah. I want to be that gateway. I mentioned Lisa being a designer, so that's a great thing to have on board. I'm also a mortgage broker, so I really want to capture potential owners from pre-approval stage all the way to managing your property. And the way I see it is I really want to have it as a second home strategy. And the way I put it is vacation home for the owner, vacation rental for me, meaning I want to offset as much of the cost as possible. I'm not going to come in all Warren Buffett-y. I'm going to make you $5 million this year. I want you to get your place to stay at with the family. You go to maybe a month out of the year. Let's not collect cobwebs for the rest of the year. Let's make you income that you otherwise wouldn't have had, that maybe will pay it off completely, or maybe $2,000 a month behind it.
John, this is how it all started, right? This is a look back into when vacation rentals pre-Airbnb, this is what it was all about. I want to be able to afford and finance and own a second home, a vacation home that we can go ahead and take our family. And when we're not using it, or we can come and bring all extended family if you get a really large place, and then cousin so-and-so is staying at it this week, so-and-so is staying at it this week. And the rest of the time, you're putting it up in newspapers and you're seeing a little ad and staying in here. And it was email and it was letters. Vacation rentals is not a new thing, but this is how it all started. And since Airbnb turned into a very lucrative business, and it's a business model, and it is, that's more the focus for most people. But if you can go ahead and bring it back to the roots and showcase to these homeowners or these new second homeowners that, hey, you can stay in here as long as you want, but when you're not using it, let's make sure it's occupied, and let's make sure that money is helping to repair any damage and to keep everything up to date and up to snuff. And it just makes so much sense.
And to add to that, great points is accessibility, right? Some people in their mind, they think that owning that property is 20 years down the line. They're kicking it down the line because they know that I'm 30 years old. So a lot of my people are buying their first home. They're thinking about that first kid. So they're just worried about the home that they just bought in the past few years. They're not worried about the next home. But if I can say that I'm going to offset a lot of your costs, that might be closer. Maybe let your baby become a kid, and then you'll think about having a place for that kid to run around in, or during the winter down here in Florida. So making that dream one step closer is definitely something I want to do. We can jump into, at some point, challenges and financing, which is a whole other thing. But if I can help in any way make that dream closer, then that's doing my job.
Hey, John. Let's talk about one of the most frustrating challenges of hosting. Cleaning. Seriously, hosting is hard enough. Why does cleaning have to be such a pain?
SDR cleaning is not the same as residential, and you need someone who knows the difference. Plus, cleaners have access to your property. You need to find people who are qualified and trustworthy.
Add to that, you need cleaners who don't need to be micromanaged. Who has time to text schedules back and forth and try to confirm day and time, especially when bookings change. And then, dealing with invoices, payments, and tax reporting?
Turno has solved all of these challenges with its cleaning management software. Turno's Cleaner Marketplace has over 55,000 vetted short-term rental cleaners, and they make finding a local cleaner super easy. You just enter some property and cleaning details, and cleaners start bidding. You can see things like competitive cleaner prices, business credentials, and reviews before you agree to work together. Plus, Marketplace cleaners are paid automatically once the job is completed. No more manual payment hassles.
When you sync Turno to your listing calendars, every turnover gets auto-scheduled as bookings come in. And if anything changes, your cleaner is notified immediately. Plus, cleaners can see if it's the same day turnover, so they know right away that time is due. And with tools like photo checklists, inventory management, problem reporting, and the guest checkout review prompt, Turno gives hosts real-time eyes and ears on the ground, right from the cleaner to the host app.
No BS listeners can get a $150 Amazon gift card when they try Turno and its cleaner marketplace. New users can sign up at turno.com/no BS, search for a cleaner in your area, connect with one or more, and then complete a marketplace cleaning. Once you see how easy and simple cleaning management can be, you'll love how much time and money you save, not to mention no more cleaning headaches. To learn more, go to turnup.com/OBS and get started today.
A lot of that's mindset change, right? Because you're changing the way that people perceive how to do something. And talk to me about the challenge of, because it's one thing to be a homeowner, it's one thing to be a homeowner slash investor, and then it's one thing to be an investor, right? Because you're telling people to get a second home, right? But you're also encouraging people to take that second home and rent it out when they're not there, right? So that dichotomy of, oh, this is our second home getaway, it hits a little different when it's, but we're going to lock off and put all our stuff over here in this room and then let other people come into this home in order to pay for this home, in order to make this home more of an asset than a liability, right? So talk to us about, in your market, like, how does that conversation go? Is that more of an education? Is it more of you having to show them? Like, how are you converting that into this mindset where people can own earlier, right? If they're flexible in terms of how they do it.
Right. Haven't done it yet. But this will be my plan. So once again, Lisa being an interior designer is the key component here, because what we focus on, even for our guests in our properties that we're at right now, is making your place feel like home. And sorry, we won't have your family picture. That's obvious. But we're going to work hand in hand with owners that, yes, we might have to move your skis into the shed. We're going to work hand in hand so that place feels like their home. There's going to be non-negotiables like our coffee station. And we always have a hashtagable moment, a wall. We like our neon signs. Like right behind me in a few weeks, there will be a neon sign. We want to bring our elements to the table, no doubt. But we're going to make it feel like home for everybody. So that will be definitely how we want to overcome that challenge for making people want to jump into this. Because even I took a flight yesterday to come out to Florida, because now, as you can see, contractors are starting to work here again. So I want to be here to oversee the whole operation. And when I walked in, it was so weird how much it felt like home. And I feel like that when I go to our properties back in Magog. And having the proper cleaning company also comes into play, so that when you walk in, it, as you left it last, you wouldn't even know that there were guests in the meantime. That's how I want to bridge that gap, because I really, as much as possible, want to make it feel like a second home. And that, again, it goes into vacation home for the owner, vacation rental for me. And then in between, you wouldn't even know. But you have to educate them to be as upfront as possible about the days, because we don't count. So
You're talking about Canada. Let's pivot here and let's talk about some of the challenges. We can dive into misconceptions and all different things. You mentioned earlier that Quebec had the most rigorous, during COVID, some of the rules for stay in place kind of stuff. We're not going to really talk about that right now, but let's talk about short-term rental, a vacation rental regulations, and what you as hosts and property managers are up against. And we can dive in as wherever and however we'd like.
So we actually have, minus taking a couple months, a couple years ago, I think they've gone better to get back to us. We have a terrace board that's good at giving us our licensing. And I think Kathleen had touched upon it a couple of weeks ago when she was on, that Quebec actually has their stuff in order when it comes to licensing. Personally, where we are in Magog, they've been doing condo hotels since the 80s, more Airbnb operators than there are owners. So there's a level of comfort there. What we're up against, though, is I see many literally perfect locations for short-term rentals. When we talk about cottage country, like similar to the picture that I'm looking at right now in my background, that just don't allow it. And for me, it's a huge question mark, and it's limiting ourselves. It's not allowing your coffee shop owner down the street to make that extra income. Tourism is good. It's not just parties. It's not, yes, you get those stories, but I think a way to overcome that, and I think there's a lack of education for Quebecers, whether it's because it's far, because it's US dollar, because it's another language, but for things like noise, there's things like Minute that allow you to detect noise and tell people to simmer down. The two main challenges I would see is where it's not like it is for me in Magog, where it should be easier to become Airbnb investors, we need to kick that door down. But also this the education piece that we're missing. When I go to Nashville, I'm not seeing Quebecers. When I go to Miami, I'm not seeing Quebecers.
And the education piece there isn't geared towards Quebecers. It's not geared towards Canadians. And in true Canadian fashion, I could say something like, sorry. Was that good? Was that
Very good.
Like a good sorry? I probably shouldn't have got. But whatever the case, what you're talking about is right now in Magog and where you're at, you're like, today the tourism board is fantastic and everything's going smoothly in our municipality where we live in our section of Quebec. But potentially, it's not always going to be that way. So I think that the education piece is how do we go ahead and help these other municipalities that are having struggles? How do we go ahead and come together in a unified front and set ourselves up as the ones that know what the hell is going on and is there as a professional and help educate? But you also have to think about in your own location in Magog, it might not be so rosy a year from now, 2 years from now. And mm-hmm. so to make sure that you have a coalition, you have a group of people together that are promoting responsible renting and promoting the, why are you guys doing this? So you're doing it because you want to help vacationers. You're doing it to add extra income. The big thing that Catherine has brought up is the ease in hospitals and travel and stuff. They're not as accessible as they are in the States. These lodging opportunities for people that are traveling are important. It's not just a way to make more money. They are strategically placed. Canada's a vast country and certain aspects of it are not densely populated. So when you start restricting and basing rules and regulations on cities, and we see that here in the States as well, if you're basing rules and regulations on how cities feel and having the government or the provincial government make decisions based on what is happening in the city, it's not the same thing as what's happening out in the sticks. It directly impacts that.
And to that point, part of, because I'm speaking at the conference and I'm going to, at the start, I want to go into a bit of what we do. And I know that what I do with NISA, we're doing good in this world, or we're allowing people to come visit and have a great little weekend at our place in a comfortable space. On the flip side, and this is where the lack of education, knowing how things work, if someone goes to a property in our same neighborhood that's really bad, it ruins it for all of us. I'd rather have good competition all around us that keeps us at a high standard. About a month ago, I got a guest that wrote to me in a panic saying, do you happen to have room tonight? And this is Friday of the weekend, the middle of the ski season. It was honestly a no. She wrote to me from a year ago because she had booked me last year, but not this year. And she was in a panic because her place, she had to whip out the brooms and all that stuff. And it just wasn't good. The clean the sheets and just that type of horror story. If you flip it, if she went to that place the first time, she never would have gone to my place because she would have X'd out that whole market, right? So keeping high standards for the whole market, I think of friends I've actually made because they went on a podcast and they mentioned the Eastern Townships. I don't know if Terry Gibson and Philip from Chalabunga in Orford, but they're right down the street from me. And
don't know them. Are they going to Cannes Days?
They are. And they were just with me in Nashville, or at least Philip was. So we'll do a handoff. But I'm sure many owners in the area would look at them and be scared because they're outstanding, a little design. Even when you talk to Philip, he'll go into all the data and he knows everything that's happening on his property and they're high level. And they go on podcasts for a reason. And I'm friends with them. And I'd rather be friends with the people that are bringing high levels to our area and putting us literally on the map. Whereas we have to bring those standards to our province. And that's what I hope our province and our country. And that's what I hope people can take from Canada's Days. And it's what I got, even though you say American conferences, they don't always tailor to Canadians. I got my nuggets and more importantly, I got my relationships, and indirectly is why I'm here. You know, I think literally this cap is what Catherine saw on a boat. So she saw a hockey cap. So as a Canadian, we start talking about hockey and realize that she has Canadian relations, and here we are. And I think what she mentioned, one of the people that She spoke to an American conference that says that there's a lack of Canadian content. I don't want to be like, I'm the reason, and I'm the, here I am. It opens doors that you might not expect. And if anything, it's the networking piece and going home with a to-do list.
I met Catherine at a favor conference, and I put a text out to every conference attendee and said, hey, I'm having an early morning breakfast. Anyone wants to show up and talk shop? And she showed up. It was like at 7 a.m. and on a conference, which no one, you know, those are the people that went to bed early the night before. No, they're
in. For sure.
And they just stayed up and didn't go to bed.
Or but she went to bed.
I thought Catherine was the all-nighter.
Catherine wasn't the all-nighter. But that's how we met. And we just started talking about all these different things. And that's what it's all about, right? And I think for the Canadians or anyone that's going to the Cannes Days, and that's where you're going to get out of it. It's networking. It's getting in front of high profile political people that actually can, you know, where your voice can make a difference. And it's getting all these nuggets and understanding. We now have a relationship which we didn't have prior to this conference. And we're going to bounce ideas off each other. And that's why we've built our whole, everything we've ever done off of relationships. That was the reason we started this podcast 2.5, close to 3 years ago. We just want to get to know people better. And we wanted to have real deeper conversations, like the conversations you'd have at a bar, not the conversations you'd have in front of everybody else, right? That's what this whole podcast was started.
So where I actually met Catherine for the first time, it was the Book Direct conference in Miami. And on day zero, I guess, the day before, there was a boat ride.
Right.
I was on that boat. Were you guys on the boat by any chance?
No, I was.
I got in the next day.
Okay.
Yeah. The tie-in boat ride.
Yes. And that's the thing, is on that boat. And I'm at this point, I'm not one property, setting up my second property. I said, okay, like, I was very nervous to go alone, because right now we're at the point where my wife is still working as a designer and I'm taking all the risks. So I put myself out there alone. And on that boat, you mentioned Tyann, you've got Neely Khan, you've got Maddie Rifkin, and all these. And I didn't even know it then until I go look it up later and I see them all on podcast like every week. I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm with all these fart hitters. So what I appreciate about our industry is that there's a lot of money for everyone to be making, but if you want to reach out to like the God within the industry, you're literally a DM away. Like, you go to that conference in Nashville and Marg Simpson is at a booth. And what I'm saying is, let's say you work in tech. Good luck getting a hold of Mark Zuckerberg.
I think Mark Simpson's going to really like that analogy.
I'm sitting here
like, damn, Mark.
Yes, the billboard's working, brother. Yeah. It's not even just the billboard, because Mark shows up, and Mark's a friend, a good friend of the show, great personality. But I think, you know, what makes our industry unique is just what you said. Like, when you commit to professionalism, when you commit to getting better, when you commit to understanding that it's a process, it's a collegial process, it's getting together, it's reaching out, it's learning, it's sharing best practices. And understanding that the people that you look up to were once in your space, right? They just decided to professionalize, share their learnings, and push products to the forefront that are aimed at making the industry smarter, more optimized, and just overall better, and doing it in a way that is accessible, right? Because you will go to these conferences. When you go to Cannes Day, you're going to meet people. You're from John and I to all of the people on the dais, including yourself, that are going to be speaking there. You're not going to be shuttled off into a back room and hidden like behind security. You're going to be on the floor talking to people, and we're going to do the same. And I think a lot of my questions to be for you today were going to be around like culture and how do you build it out? The reality is, this is how you build it out. It's how John and I met. It's how John and I built this podcast. It's how we've always operated, whether it was conferences, whether it was on the podcast and building relationships. Like, it is talking to people. It is engaging in dialogue. It is sharing of ideas, right? And so it's interesting to see how that's going to be developing, and you at the forefront, and Catherine and others in Canada pushing towards a more unified industry up there, a more unified collegial environment up there.
And accessible industry.
Yeah, I think is the key. Yeah, I agree.
Where I want to bridge the gap here, though, is because if I want to marry this all together, you want to talk about culture to a base. I have access to this because I speak what you speak. You know, I sound like you. Maybe some Canadian tendencies, but I sound like you, right? Mm-hmm. And we, in Quebec, that's not the reality.
Right.
And I think we're not getting that information out to people because they literally don't speak the language. Quick 101, I'm from the west part of Montreal. There's a big part of Western Montreal speaks like I speak. Might as well be Ontarian, really. So once you leave that, if you think about Austin within Texas, how they're a blue within a red, right? Mm-hmm. Not the other way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what our election map looks like in a provincial election. It's Montreal and the rest. And then within the city, even like it's a bit of a hybrid within the downtown core of Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
But protecting the French language in many ways, their ways about going about it are not learning English. It's not just promoting French. And I grew up in the French system. I went to high school in French. And so I'm here to say I take no sides. I say we should all take both sides. We are it all like in the same vein that you say how all our us as short-term rental hosts, we're better together. We're better together as language. I have friends from the West part of Montreal who's French or living in a French province is pitiful. And I'll tell them that to their face. I tell them all the time. And on the flip side, you have French people out in the sticks that don't learn English and their hopes for doing business elsewhere are always going to be dead, even to go downtown Montreal, because we do have companies. We're a big tech industry. If you don't speak English, I don't know what to do for you. But that's what I'm trying to bridge. I have ideas and a bilingual podcast, one English, one French is something I have in mind.
Love it.
Right.
Yeah, I love
like
it.
100%. I think that's what it takes, right? Because you are going to have to meet people where they are. That's nothing new for this industry. We have many from our vendors to our managers that work in bilingual markets. Marketing different. VRMA has a whole European entity in which I'm pretty sure that they've translated materials into. We're not talking about something that's, we're not going to colonize a place. It is still modern, even if they speak French. It's not hard to translate those ideas into a form that is palatable for them and understandable for them, right?
But I think the difference of
bringing them into the culture as well and understanding that there's good in, they don't have to lose their soul to expand their business, right? To do the things that are going to actually help them out doesn't mean that you're going to cause this invasion of non-French speakers. You might pick up people that can't afford to go to France, but can afford to go to Canada for French immersion experiences, right? And other things within that space. But if you're not open to that and working to that, then you're going to miss.
I think it's more of the processes, though, Mateo. I think it's more of a, are they willing? Are people willing to go ahead and what is best practices? I think best practices up in Quebec would be like, all right, I'm going to make this accessible in both French and in English. And what legally do you need to do as far as disclaimers and verbiage on websites and accessibility type stuff do you need to get done? And if those processes were, this is how you do it. These are the steps to get from point A to point B might be the way to go.
But it doesn't matter if they're not willing and understand why they're doing it. The process, you can't even get to the process until the why has been cemented. They have to understand why they're going to go do this work because they may see it as extra work. They may be like, I don't have time to do that when it's not that hard.
You got to show them
they need to know the benefit of it in understanding how it fits into their why and why they do what they do, right? Like as with everything else, you have to build into that. If you don't tap that, it's extra work and they're probably not going to want to do it. They're not going to see the benefit.
And take our industry as well, just simply as a host. Just check on the map again. So yes, I'm going to get my French Canadian speakers for sure. And you best believe that it's bonjour before hi. Mm-hmm. But we're pretty much Vermont. And so we get New England comes up to us. We get our Ontarians. We might get people from the Maritimes. I, as someone who's a perfectly bilingual person, I don't really stress about these things. But I really question how the person from the parts of Quebec that really just speak French and also have a short-term rental, what's the plan? And when you get that guest from Vermont, what are you doing? Because it's not just about being able to write down broken English or whatever. We're rid of hospitality. It has to come hospitable. When I write in French, it's as hospitable as in English. Whereas, you know, very well through a text, sometimes things don't come out properly, even when I'm writing in English. When you're writing a different language and it comes out, you might get a 4-star because the person might have thought that you're being non-hospitable.
That's a great point.
And learning, it's tone is, and like tone communication, the whole thing, like it, you can also make it fun. Like when I think of so many ideas, if you're willing to make it welcoming, which it should be, if it's, if you're in hospitality, there's so many ways that you can make that welcoming and fun and not lose your identity in the process. And, but again, that's from the outside. That's on the outside looking in, right? It's going to be your voices that are going to change that. It's going to be you. It's going to be Catherine. And it's going to be the other amazing people who are in this industry operating and the people taking the reins in the next generation of the industry, because they're the ones that got to do the work, right? They're the ones that are going to build the culture that will, that whatever that Canadian culture is going to be moving forward, it's going to be on their shoulders. But I think it's exciting. It's, I want to talk to those people. And again, I'm excited to see you. I think you coming up with a podcast that's bilingual would be dope. It's not out there. Somebody should leave. Or if it is that we're not, we haven't been exposed to it yet, do it.
Do you want to be my first French guest?
For sure. 100%.
I will roll with the punches.
I will sit up there with it. I will look, I will answer every question I can in French with my best French attempt accent. Cause I love that. Right. That's what I love about travel. I'm going to try. You can hate me all you want to, but at least I will try. Right.
Appreciate
and
that.
I'll respect it. Because I think it's dope. It's part of what makes traveling and makes this industry so fun. And again, it's what it should be. It's learning new things, talking with new people, showing new experiences, sharing, be part of your culture and not feeling that it has to be outdated. It can be what makes your space so special.
Like, and that's why guests like coming to Quebec, is we're the only place in North America where you go there and it's like, whoa, we're in another country.
You get that vibe. Yeah, look at us.
You are in another country. And I think they always say, oh, it feels like Europe. And but make it feel like Montreal. Make it feel like its own thing. Like, it's dope. It gives you those similar vibes, but it's not. And it's different. Yeah. And there's lots of reasons why. So
before we get out of here, a couple things. Can you tell us what your presentation is going to be about specifically at Canstays, first of all?
So I'm going to be speaking in French, which is my first French presentation since high school, on the issues of financing properties as a mortgage broker. That could have been its own podcast today. I bored my friend on the couch the other day, an hour, but he had questions. There's a lot of issues with financing. Anytime a lender comes in to our brokerage office, I ask the question, do you do short-term rental? It's always no. And I then joke and I say, Len, are you telling me the money I made last year was monopoly money? Like, what's that money in my bank account? Like, you're ignoring a higher margin. So I'm going to get into why I think all those things are happening, as well as what my solutions would be, because I have reached out to some of these banks. I said, you cannot speak to a better person than me. Can we sit down? Can I sit down with your decision makers? And just, I have not been able to break that door down yet, but it's my mission. And I think I'm going to use the platform I'll be standing on at that point to make my points very clear as to what the solutions could be. I know that there is a bank that is starting now to finance, but for the most part, if there were banks that said they can use short-term rental income, it's to then buy a home, not a second home, like a home. We'll use your income. But I want people to walk in and say, I am buying a short-term rental. Okay, here's your finance. Like that, I want to get to that point. And this, if we're being real right now, investors know that they don't accept it. So they come in and they say they're going to do long-term rental in Banff, like sure. Right. And otherwise known as mortgage fraud, right? If we need to figure out a way where people don't have to do subtle little frauds so that they can get their property, I wish I can sit here and say anyone can do it. Full transparency in the spirit of the No BS podcast, we got approved on high net worth programs. They did not air what we were doing with the home. So I can't be like, oh, you can do it too, because it's not the truth. But I want it to be the truth because I have solutions in mind.
We got to figure out down here too. Like that, the part, the financing of this industry is not, we could do an episode. Maybe we'll bring it back to another episode, because it's everything from the data to the actually understanding how to finance appropriately for our industry, right? And they're just, it's an old ship trying to be brand new. Like, it's just, they don't understand it well. They don't want to take the time to really understand it well. But if they really did,
Yeah, yeah. Be a different story. And
it's, you guys have down here the DSCR option, which I know is expensive, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, just to wrap a bow on this, when there's risk, what do banks do? They charge interest. So don't say no, there's not a program. Just give me the expensive program so that people can still do their number crunching and see if it makes sense overall, because we can afford a higher interest rate because we're getting higher margins. So maybe it's worth it still. So,
but that's where you get tricky, because they tend to take liberty with that, up the interest rate, and then deals don't pencil out, right? And we're sure. dealing with a smarter investor. We're dealing with a smarter climate. Those one or two points on the front or the back end, they add up, right? And especially when you're looking at seasonal inventory. We can go into this anytime later. We'll get on there. We'll get into this offline. We'll definitely.
This is setting up.
We'll think in Canada, but I think I'm with you on that, man. I think if we're able to open up capital in a way that was intelligent, right? Because I've seen it go both ways. I've seen really bad books on the front end and people say, why don't you finance this wonderful gross number that we have? And they're just like, dude, because when you pencil it out, you don't make shit. And then we've seen people that use astronomical, ridiculous data, and they come up with these terms that just shows that they don't know our industry and they set up really bad deals. So anyway, we could talk about that another day. But and in Canada, when I see you in Canada, man, we'll come up and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. And you guys, finally, it'll be the first office that my wife is at. Coming out. So, I'm excited.
So you'll be on your best behavior.
Yeah. I always am.
Now you go.
Talk about it.
I know. Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, it's been great to have you on.
Check out John's Papa's Getaways. Make sure that you sign up for the Kent Stays. If you haven't signed up for Kent Stays, use code DIRECT100 for $100 off. Mateo and I will be there. Obviously, John will be there. We're excited to see you all. And if you like what you hear on the No BS podcast, give us a leave a review, follow us on YouTube, do all that you do.
Subscribe to the channel.
Subscribe to the channel, all of the above. And again, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me, guys. It was a pleasure.